Welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. Jacob Birch, Eric Steven. I feel like we've been talking about the right things the last couple of weeks.
Genius is a strong word. Genius is probably
strong enough,
more,
though? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. It's strong but accurate. No, we've had our finger on the pulse, let's say that. And I think most of this podcast is going to be me introducing you to Dodgers you might not have heard of before, who are currently active.
So, yeah, we're going to kind of go over all of that, kind of look ahead to the final 2 months, see if we think that if this Dodgers team has what it takes to overcome the deficit they're in and not have to play a excruciating wild card game. So we'll do that. We have questions from Craig. We have a Dodgers rewind. All of that after this. It's really interesting after the trade deadline, the sort of excitement brewing around is, ooh, this team's getting healthy. Maybe they won't have so many sort of weird names, unusual names, I should say, coming up and pitching for the Dodgers. And you have to figure out how is this guy in the system? And that's kind of been true on both sides of the ball, right? A lot of bench players who were getting starting roles and weren't quite sure where they came from. That's gotten better. Well, there is some injury news, and we'll talk about there. But pitching is just more of the same.
Yeah, literally, just before for the pitching part, that just reminded me. Literally, Billy McKinney started 10 straight games in right field when Mookie Betts was out. So it's like, You expect the unexpected, I think. Whoever's available and healthy, it'll be interesting. So, but yeah, for the pitching, last week's episode was titled, "Do the Dodgers Have Enough Pitching?" And the answer is no. Right now, very, very much not. After our podcast last week, there was a little more clarity on Clayton Kershaw, where he was like, I just came back too soon from the last time, and then he got soreness in his elbow. He hasn't pitched since July 3rd. His quote was, "Being hurt is miserable. I don't really enjoy it at all." At that time, it was like, maybe the last week of August, most likely September, which is like what we were sort of speculating last week, but it became clearer. Then Monday, we're recording on a Tuesday this week, this Monday, that got locked in because the Dodgers placed both Clayton Kershaw and Danny Duffy on the 60-day injured list. Now, everyone freaks out at the specter of a 60-day because a lot of people assume that it's 60 days from that day, but that's not true. If they're already on the injured list, it just goes back to the start date. And Kershaw hasn't pitched since July 3rd. Now, he was placed on the injured list on July 7th. They did not, you could backdate a move up to 3 days. The Dodgers did not do that. So his start date is July 7th, which means the earliest he could possibly be activated is September 5th. So we have a hard date in terms of the earliest we could see Kershaw in a major league game. So that gives you some idea of the timeline. For Duffy, it's later because he was placed on the injured list by the Royals on July 20th, and they retroactive that to July 17th with the left flexor strain, something he already missed a month for earlier in the year. That means his earliest date is September 18th. If he returns on that date, that means he only has 14 Dodgers games left in the season to sort of make his impact. So we talked about how his sort of role might be the bullpen, if anything. I would say that's like a definite now, just based on the timing. And very likely that he doesn't even throw a pitch for the Dodgers, just given the timing. The other one I'm super skeptical about, they signed Cole Hamels. We talked about that last week. It's sort of running together. Technically, wait, they didn't sign him when we recorded last week, right?
Yeah, I don't think we did.
Yes, that broke the next day. Wow. See, the timing of all this is, the movement is so rapid.
No, you said, we talked about last week, I'm like, we did? I remember having similar discussions of, like, the Dodgers are going to take a flyer on this guy. Hope it works.
So, yeah, God, that all happened. Like, yeah, the weekend reviews that I do, like, it becomes, like, half of the entire post is just listing all the transactions in the last week. And it's been really busy. So that's right. The Hamels thing happened on Wednesday last week. We recorded on Tuesday, yeah. And that was, I remember, because it was Max Scherzer's debut with the Dodgers, and they signed Cole Hamels on the same day, which is like, imagine telling yourself that in any of the last 10 years, just being like, what? Like, but so he's thrown 3 1/3 innings since the start of 2020. He's been hurt a lot. The plan was he was going to throw 2 simulated innings at Dodger Stadium Saturday and build up from there. So he's also another maybe September guy, just because of, you know, he's not going to be able to build up. Now, I was there watching that sim game from the press box. It was well before the game. He threw 1 inning. Edwin Yuseta also threw, like, in the bottom of the inning, if you will. And Hamels went out to warm up for a second, then talked to the coaching staff and walked off the field. And then when we asked Dave Roberts, Roberts said, oh, yeah, it was planned. We just wanted to get him a second time up on the mound. I am not buying that. So best case scenario, he's only at 1 inning right now and he still needs to build up. So that just makes it even longer. Worst case scenario is he felt something because he hasn't pitched in a while and he's bad. I think he was only throwing in the upper 80s. Not totally sure on that, but, let's just say I'm skeptical that he'll even throw a pitch for the Dodgers. His contract is $1 million for the rest of the year. He gets $200,000 per start and $200,000 per relief appearance that lasts at least 3 1/3 innings. That was like the same sort of incentive, not the exact amounts, but the same incentive structure that Alex Wood had last year. So, again, color me skeptical. Not sure I buy that he's going to start a game. But even if he does, he's like a September guy. Tony Gonsolin might be the earliest one back from the injured list, but at the moment, he's not even currently throwing, shoulder inflammation. So what that means is basically the Dodgers need to fill in from now until September with minor league guys. Bullpen games, it's going to be a mess. So,
and that's having the fourth starter be David Price, who has pitched well in this role, but it's very doubtful he'll ever give you any amount of real length.
Like consistent length, yeah. Too. Like, so that's a problem. Today, we're recording on Tuesday morning. The Dodgers start a series in Philadelphia. They have 22 games in the next 23 days. They technically don't need a fifth starter till Saturday if they wanted to wait that long. But it probably makes more sense if they slot someone in either tomorrow, Wednesday, or Thursday this week. Because it would, at the very least, give Julio Urias and Walker Buehler an extra day of rest this time through. Or if they do it Wednesday, it would also give David Price an extra day of rest. Because those extra days aren't going to happen a lot over the next, 3 weeks. So we'll see. The candidates are, Mitch White, who's pitched in the majors quite a bit this year. He last pitched on August 5th, went 5 innings. Andre Jackson, who just got called up to AAA, he's on the 40-man. He pitched on August 3rd. He's actually scheduled to pitch later today as a bulk guy for AAA. So, if something happens where, he gets scratched or doesn't pitch, maybe he's one of the guys that come up, but they might do a staggered thing where maybe it's Mitch White this week, then they send him down and have extra bullpen people for like the next 4 days, and then call up a different pitcher to be the bulk guy for the next time, and then so it's going to be a mess. They've had a bunch of like roster churn type things over the last couple months, and we have quite a lot to get to because just before we started. You expressed surprise at Kevin Quackenbush being a Dodger.
Yeah, I just wasn't on social media. Yeah, I was just not on social media Saturday. I did watch the game, but if it was mentioned on the broadcast, I was not paying attention at that time. Did pay attention to social media Sunday, and then brought up like, oh, and you know, in addition to the addition of Quackenbush, I was like, wait, what? One, he's on the Dodgers roster, apparently. Two, when did he get added? How did I miss that? How did I miss that this was old news?
So the weekend was weird. They won 2 out of 3 against the Angels. The loss was extra innings, of course, because that's what the Dodgers do. Because they had this stretch of 8 days with 3 off days, so it was like off day, 2 games against the Astros, off day, 3 games against the Angels, off day. They went that whole series with actually 14 position players and 12 pitchers, which is like super rare for this team. I have to look. I think they've done that like at least once before, but it might be 0 times before, like this year, just because they're usually like at 14 pitchers basically, rather than, you know, or 13 or something. So very odd. So they only had quote unquote only had eight relievers, which is an absurd thing to say, but that's low for them. And they were getting guys hurt. I don't even have it in our notes here. One of the reasons some of these pitchers were added. So Jimmy Nelson, he was going to go into Tuesday night's game against the Astros last week. The Dodgers were down 1-0 in the 8th, and he felt something in his elbow, so they shut him down. They brought in Victor Gonzalez instead. Victor Gonzalez gave up a 2-run home run to Yordan Alvarez, sort of putting that game away. And I think in the recap, I called that game a Russian nesting doll of bad decisions, or like sore wounds or something. I'm a writer. I don't remember what I write. But that was a loss. They won the next night. But Nelson, the next day, went on the injured list with elbow inflammation. And then a couple days later, he went on the 60-day because he's out for the season with Tommy John surgery and flexor tendon repair. I didn't see both things at once. I guess it's going to be in the same procedure, but it's like same surgery, but two different procedures. That's nuts. I saw flexor tendon and like elbow and assumed that was like the thing. But then the more I dug into it, and then asked around, Tommy John surgery and flexor tendon repair. So just brutal for someone who was really, really good, but also was limited in the fact that couldn't really go more than an inning, couldn't really pitch more than like once every 3 days. I mean, you know, that was kind of his thing. But every time he was on the mound, he was great. Like, he was excellent this year, all they could have asked for. But then, so Gonzalez, who came in, who has not been as good as he was last year, he's been off. He lands on the injured list a few days later with a right knee inflammation. So he's going to be out a couple weeks. So it's been brutal. So, yeah, Saturday they added Kevin Quackenbush, 32-year-old, last pitch in the majors in 2018. He had like a sub-1 ERA with AAA Oklahoma City, who was pitching really well. And then Sunday they added Justin Brule, a left-hander. He's 24. He was signed out of Cal Poly San Luis Obispo as an undrafted free agent in 2017 and just kind of worked his way up. Now, he's one of those guys, too, that I'm sure was affected by the pandemic. He's 24 now, but so 2019 was his 22-year-old season. He played 4 games in high A, which was then Rancho Cucamonga, and he hadn't pitched above that, you know, since. And he wasn't on the like at the alternate site last year, so it was like kind of on his own, you know, just figuring out stuff, how to progress, how to develop in a lost year. And then he starts this year at Double A, and then works his way up to Triple A. He's been really, really good, and they called him up. Both Quackenbush and Brule pitched on Sunday. They were the 31st and 32nd pitchers used by the Dodgers this season. That's a new franchise record. It beats out 2015, 2016, and 2018. If you could sense a pattern here, the Dodgers used a lot of pitchers under the Andrew Friedman front office, but this season is more than usual. the moves kept coming. So I mentioned earlier that Clayton Kershaw, Danny Duffy on Monday were transferred to the 60-day disabled list, or injured list, excuse me. Old habits die hard, I apologize. But they did that because they claimed two people off waivers. One was another pitcher, Connor Green, 26-year-old, went to Santa Monica High, played in three games, his first three major league games this year with the Orioles, 1473 ERA. His numbers in AAA, not very good either. I'm sure there's underlying things there. I haven't really dug into him because I was off yesterday. But yeah, that's they're in warm body acquisition mode at this point. I think a lot, especially on the pitching side. And then the other one was sort of this like weird transactional loop. I'm not even sure if we mentioned that Chad Wallach was a Dodger last week on the podcast. They claimed him off waivers on July 30th, the same day they traded Kaber Ruiz. So giving them a third catcher on the 40-man roster. Not that he's going to be active, but it's just to have like a fallback if one of Will Smith or Austin Barnes gets hurt. They didn't, and like Tim Fedorovich was in at the Olympics, didn't really have a ton, like just say if something were to happen. So Wallach joins the Dodgers. He was once drafted by the Dodgers out of high school, didn't sign, ended up going, I forgot if he got drafted by the Reds or Marlins. I think it was Reds, and then he ended up with the Marlins. But so the Dodgers end up with eventually all three of Tim Wallach's sons play for them in the organization. Chad Wallach lasted in the organization 8 days. The Angels claimed him off waivers on Saturday, and they DFA'd another catcher, Anthony Bemboom. And then on Monday, the Dodgers claimed Anthony Bemboom. So it's like a trade in a way. So now the Dodgers do have a third catcher on the 40-man roster. They also signed, I guess, Tony Wolters to a minor league deal. I'm not sure if that he has joined Oklahoma City just yet. So they have some options if, you know, things go south catcher-wise, at least. So, they're going to need more, like, 40-man space later today. They're supposed to activate Corey Knebel after he missed 92 games. He last pitched for them in April. He was also excellent to start the season. So the hope is that he gives the Dodgers another back-end arm. They'll need a 60-day move for that. They'll also need another 60-day move if they activate or when they activate Darian Nunez, even if they like option him. So they placed him on the injured list with no designation the other day. So you can't really assume on this. However, you can in this case because I forget which of the days. I guess it was Sunday. One of the moves they like didn't make a corresponding 40-man roster move, so they technically counting Nunez had 41 on the 40-man roster. And at this point, it's worth pointing out that players on the COVID-19 injured list don't count towards the 40-man, and you're not allowed to disclose like non-playing injury or medical information without the player's consent. So it's safe to assume Darian Nunez is on the COVID injured list, I think. And right now not taking up a 40-man space. So they have like 41 players on the 40-man, just like for a little bit with Trey Turner, it was the same thing. But he was disclosed on the COVID IL, but then they had to make a move to get him off. So, yeah, that's sort of where they're at. They use those pitchers. Who knows if Connor Green's going to come up at some point? I would imagine probably, just because they'll need an arm at some point on the road trip. But yeah, that's sort of where they're at pitching wise. I keep since yesterday, I've seen like there's been like a few players like designated for assignment yesterday and today, and I just keep thinking like, well, Dodgers are probably going to claim them at some point. they're just who knows at this point. But yeah, they're bringing in a lot of guys.
Do you have a guess on if you had to make the 40-man moves to, let's say, get Corey Knebel up, what's the first move you make?
Okay, so I think Kevin Quackenbush is probably a one and done for me.
You and I were talking right before we went air. If that happens, yeah. You and I were delighted. We love small sample size trivia. And if that happens, he would probably, you know, assuming nothing weird happens in the next couple of months, end his Dodger season leading in FIP with a negative two-something FIP. Could not be passed in strikeout per nine in 27. Would have, I think it was an 81 hit per nine. And then a 9.
81.
Yeah. So Dodgers legends, Kevin Quackenbush, well, should that happen.
So the thing is this, though, you got to remember, too. They started the week, I guess, at 14 position players and 12 pitchers. So they're almost certainly going to go back to at least 13-13 and probably 14 pitchers at some point. Mm-hmm. So you really have to, like, look at position players to drop. And, like, Zach Rex ended the week currently active. I believe he's probably going to be optioned. Now, that doesn't create a 40-man spot for Knebel, but it creates an active roster spot. So I think it's also possible that one of the various other injured Dodgers pitchers could just be transferred to the 60-day injured list. Maybe it's Scott Alexander, something like that. So you could definitely see that kind of a move. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see exactly how this all plays out, because there's going to be a lot of there's going to be more churning basically to get to September. So and there's no trades anymore. So that's like the only way to get players is waiver claims and things like that. So it should be weird.
But it's not all sad news. There's some exciting stuff happened in Dodgerland since we last talked.
Yeah, and this also sort of falls a little bit two episodes ago where we sort of lobbied for the idea of retiring the phrase full strength. That said, the brief glimpse we got of the Dodgers at full strength, holy crap. Like, what a lineup, man. Like, it looks great. Trey Turner was, you know, the big addition on offense, obviously, and he's just so good. Like, I knew he was good. I knew he was very good. I've seen him play before, but at the same time, like, he's just shockingly fast. Like, I didn't watch him a lot, unless the Dodgers were playing the Nationals, you know, I guess. So you just sort of forget how fast he is. And then in comparison to some of the other guys, like, they activated him Friday. He got there, like, later in the day, so he didn't start that day. He pinch hit later in that game. Then he started Saturday and Sunday, both at second base. Right away, in the first inning on Saturday, he scored from first base on a Muncy double and scored it. I believe it was the, like, whatever StatCast uses to measure sprint speed, it was like the fastest sprint speed by a Dodger all season. And later that game, he stole a base in where he, like, slid into second as the ball was, like, passing the pitcher's mound, the throw to second base. Like, he's just a ridiculously easy steal. And then on Sunday, he scored from first base on a single. Now, there's more to it than that. He was running on the pitch. The ball got deflected in from second base into left field, like David Fletcher dove. However, like, the just watching him as the ball's, like, trickling into left field, and you're like, oh, he's not stopping, like, you know, and, like, the crowd, like, sees it, and you're like, oh, and then so that was remarkably exciting. And he was safe easily. Like, he didn't beat a close play at the plate or anything like that. It's just ridiculous. And, you know, he's a really good hitter. It's just wild, man, to watch him. Now, it was funny because I think I tweeted Trey Turner has holy shit speed, and there's a lot of, like, national fans who are like, oh, America's finally discovering how good Trey calm down. Like, you know, we get it. Like, we know he's good. It doesn't mean we can't revel in, like, the awesomeness of watching it, right? So, I don't know. It's just weird. The other Mookie Betts hitting third. Trey Turner's going to hit leadoff. Looks like Muncy second, Betts third in like most days, which is a change from how they've done the lineup. But that's what happens when you have, like, a lot of really good players. Like, things get weird. Mookie Betts, in his first three games back from the injured list, he had only done one of those by the time we recorded last week. He played three games at second base, moved back to right field once Trey Turner came back. He left Friday's game after six innings, dealing with that hip again. Then he was off Sunday. So it's one of those things where he's basically going to be dealing with the hip the rest of the season. Dave Roberts has used the term governor probably like 837 times in the last like 2 weeks. Some about Betts, some about Cody Bellinger with his hamstring. So Betts is like semi-limited kind of, because he's also in that, in the Trey Turner zone of being like super dynamic, like at all facets of the game, like speed, arm, hitting, like everything. And just him running as well is great. And he's limited there. But that said, he's still hitting, like, like diminished Mookie Betts still hitting, since his return from the injured list, 8 for 21, 3 home runs in 5 games. So just a remarkable player. Now, the full strength thing comes in because Sunday, so Justin Turner, Sunday was his 100th start of the season. The first Dodger this season to start 100 games. He leads the team in starts. He's 36 years old. And there's no DH this year, American League games. So he did start 4 games at DH in AL Parks. But still, 96 starts at third. Only Chris Taylor has more starts in the field, but he has 99 total starts, so trailing Turner overall. Turner at 36 being very durable is a sort of semi-surprise this year. That said, he made a great play sort of ranging into foul territory, or took him into foul territory, a ground ball by Jose Iglesias, then he threw him out. This was in the second inning Sunday. Then he left the game right after that. The next inning he was pinch hit for. And, of course, Albert Pujols, who pinch hit for him, hit a homer because the team's really deep. Probably going to be a few days for Turner out. So we'll see. It's one of those – could be one of those lingering things. But this will be interesting, too, because – so Trey Turner's going to play second. Corey Seager's going to get occasional off days, and Turner will play short those days. Now – in a normal world, Cody Bellinger might sit against more lefties. He played against the lefty on Sunday because Mookie Betts was off, and like with the full lineup, they don't really have like so like Pujols. Sunday was the first game Pujols didn't start against a lefty since joining the Dodgers. Now, part that was mostly because like they don't really have, if Betts is out, they kind of, the outfield is basically Pollock, Taylor, Bellinger at that point. Unless, I guess, you could go like McKinney or Beatty. Beatty's not a good outfielder at all. McKinney's better defensively. But so they're in a bit of a bind in that regard. But Chris Taylor's going to play more infield, but, you know, probably, or actually some in a normal thing, probably more center field when Bellinger's sitting. But with Turner out, Taylor might be the one to step in to play third base. Now, Max Muncy played third base the rest of the game Sunday. But that was also because Chris Taylor started in the outfield. So it's weird. They have movable parts. We'll see how they sort of do it. But even among like all that, like Betts is sort of limited. Justin Turner got hurt. There's still like a lot to be excited about. Max Scherzer made his debut, was awesome. 7 innings, 10 strikeouts to beat the Astros. That was a wild series. The fans were angry, and they got what they wanted Wednesday to win. But I think mostly what they wanted was for 2 days to sort of yell at the Astros, and sure, they sure did that. But Scherzer even got a curtain call, which he said he's never gotten before, which is surprising. But then I thought about it, like, how many pitchers really get curtain calls? Like, so, yeah, that was weird. And then also the lineup just with Trey Turner especially, it looks great. Like, that the Saturday day where the lineup was its best, like, all year, because Betts was in, Trey Turner was in, A.J. Pollock sat, and he has, like, a 900 OPS. So, like, this is a really good team. As constructed. So even if, you know, a guy might be hurt or two guys might be hurt, still a really good team. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at right now.
And Cody Bellinger, small sample size warning here, but has a small sample size of looking, you know, not like an MVP, but someone that is not worse than the pitcher in the lineup.
Yeah, he turned around like a 95-mile-an-hour fastball Sunday. He's homered in two straight games, but the one Dave Roberts was kind of gushing about, that Sunday one, he's like, he backspinned a home run. He's like, that's looking like the old Cody. So, you know, he's had a terrible year offensively.
Yep.
But, yeah, it doesn't mean he's terrible. Like, he's also, you know, been hurt. First, his shoulder, everyone's power sapped after like a shoulder thing. So he's just working his way through that. Sort of a good sign in that regard. But I have a trivia question for you related to Max
Scherzer. Can I blame an injury for how terrible I'm going to do on trivia?
Yeah, of course, yeah. Cool. What's the injury?
Shoulder.
Oh, got
it. It's distracting.
You and Tony Gonsolin. Yep. Max Scherzer, 10 strikeouts in his Dodgers debut. Came 8 days after he turned 37. He's one of five Dodgers aged 37 or older to strike out 10 in a game. Four of those came in Los Angeles, one in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
How many of the other four pitchers can you name?
I will try to do that after this. How many Dodgers who struck out 10 or more batters after 37 or older can I name? Well, I'm going to name one, Max Scherzer.
I said of the other four, but I'll give you that. I'll give you that. You have one of the five.
Rich Hill.
Rich Hill did it five times. He actually has the second most such games. I will tell you that he's trailing only the pitcher in Brooklyn.
Okay. And see, this is where, like, I don't know. I don't know old dudes. I got one. Mm-hmm. So we'll throw some guesses out. Greg Maddux?
No, never struck out 10.
I wonder what his career... I wonder what his Dodger career high was. I'm gonna look that up.
It's probably like nine a bunch of times. It'd be funny.
I'll see if I can figure it out. And see, this is where I'm just gonna kind of throw some names at the board because I don't know how old they were when they stopped pitching mm-hmm. for the Dodgers. Don Drysdale.
Nope. I'm trying to think. He retired at like 33 or 34.
Okay. I figured it was a stretch. I didn't think it would be that much of a stretch though. So I'll throw out some Brooklyn names and just if they're both wrong, I'll give up. Dazzy Vance.
See, he went to the well and it paid off. It's excellent. So he did 13 times. It's only been done 22 total times. He did the first 13 of them. The oldest was 41 years, 142 days old. Against the Phillies, who the Dodgers play tonight. This one was at Ebbets Field on July 24th, 1932. So you're only missing two other players. I will tell you,
yeah.
It happened in the the Jacob Burch life era. That's when it happened.
Oh, no.
Both of them.
That might not help, actually.
one was pitching in the Jacob Burch era. The other one was probably a little young for you.
Oh, okay. I'm gonna retire. I'm not even gonna, because I'll just be throwing names out. So,
Tom Candiotti, 1995.
Yep.
And then the other two were Kevin Brown.
Oh,
one in 2002, one in 2003.
Definitely a name I thought of. I did not think he was that old when he came to the Dodgers. I had him more in the mid 30s range.
His age 34 season was 98 with the Padres, and then he signed a 7-year deal with the Dodgers.
Yep, I definitely had
that. He's going to be too old, and he was, but like, you know.
Greg Maddux's career high with the Dodgers was six.
Six?
Yeah, isn't that strange?
I am surprised. I thought he would have had like a game or two where he just, you know.
And that was in December. That was the game after the... I think his best game with the Dodgers, where he pitched eight innings. I was at that game. I think it was a Russell Martin walk-off.
Vinny Chulk, yeah.
Neat.
Sunday night. That, and also he out-dueled Jason Schmidt,
yep.
Who then signed that year, that winter with the Dodgers. fun game. Costly game. I have a Dodgers rewind for you.
And for our listeners.
Someone who did not strike out 10 as a 37-year-old with the Dodgers, sadly. Claude Osteen. I'm surprised we have not done Claude Osteen before. I looked to make sure. I was like looking at our list. Thank God I semi-keep track of these. I was reminded of him because Saber put out a thing because Monday was his birthday. And I was like, oh. And then I looked. Oh, we haven't done Claude Osteen. So he was fresh on my mind. So I figured, let's do Claude Osteen. Now, we have done, in a second, but just to start, Claude Osteen, pretty good. It's not really a baseball nickname, more than just a nickname. They called him Gomer because he looked just like actor Jim Nabors, who played Gomer Pyle in the 1960s. TV was weird back then, but he really did look like him. We have done Frank Howard before on Dodgers Rewind, back in August 2019, episode 1923. If you're interested, I know everyone who's listening obviously goes back and listens to every episode like three or four times, so we get it. Osteen and Howard are linked because Osteen is part of two like very memorable LA Dodgers trades. One was at the winter meetings in 1964. This was a huge deal. Osteen, John Kennedy. No, not that one. This one was an infielder and alive. And 100,000 went from the Senators to the Dodgers. Frank Howard, third baseman Ken McMullen, and pitchers Phil Ortega and Pete Richard, and then eventually the player to be named later was Dick Nen, a first baseman pinch hitter, went to the Senators. So 5-for-2 deal. This is one of those, like, one of the reasons I'm strongly against the idea of having to, quote-unquote, win a trade. This trade gave both teams exactly what they wanted. Howard became a star, a home run hitting legend. His nickname was the Capital Punisher in D.C. He was great. Ken McMullen, underrated, like, solid regular. Like, I think he averaged, like, 3 WAR for, like, a decade almost. He actually came back to the Dodgers in 1973 to the point where I believe he started at third base on opening day in 1963 and 1973, but like nothing else. So it's one of those fun little quirks. But at the same time, Osteen was the number 3 starter behind Koufax and Drysdale on 2 pennant winners and a World Series winner in 1965. So like, you know, the Dodgers absolutely got what they want. They dealt from a position of strength, so that was good for them. The other move was at the end of Osteen's career with the Dodgers, 73 winter meetings, they traded him to the Astros for Jimmy Winn. Jimmy Winn had MVP caliber year in 1974, excellent in 1975 as well. Two really, really good years in Los Angeles. So Osteen sort of he was no slouch himself in between those trades. He made the All-Star team 3 times with the Dodgers. He had a 309 ERA. It was a 106 ERA plus because obviously the era, one of the better pitchers environments ever, 60s, pitching at Dodger Stadium, the high mound and all. Now, he averaged in his 9 years with the Dodgers, 37 starts, 266 innings, and 16 wins every year. I was looking, you sort of instinctively discount stats sometimes from that era because like every pitcher went 9 innings or whatever. Like, you know, they didn't all, but even like among that era, Osteen still like stood out. So in that 9-year period, he was actually tied for first in the majors with 335 starts. Mickey Lolich also did it. He was 4th in innings, 2397. He was 4th with 34 shutouts. Bob Gibson, Mel Stottlemyre, and Juan Marichal were the only ones with more. 8th in wins. You know, look, wins are what they are, but like it was also a big measuring stick back then. So he did exactly like what the Dodgers needed, gave them sort of stability. Like Don Sutton was around 2, so like that, though, obviously Koufax retired then. 1969 was Drysdale's last year, so like he sort of helped usher in the new sort of era in the 70s when they got really good. His key moment with the Dodgers was his very first year. They were down 2-0 after the first two games in Minnesota in the World Series. They come to Dodger Stadium. Claude Osteen started game three, pitched a shutout, 5-hitter. And then the Dodgers won all three games in Los Angeles. They went back, lost game six, and then Koufax, on 2 days rest, pitched a shutout to win the series. Osteen lost his other two World Series starts. He lost that game six in 1965 to the Twins. He only gave up in that game two runs, one earned. Game three in 1966, he lost 1-0 to the Orioles. The Dodgers offense took a vacation in that World Series, and they got swept. So Osteen, in his three World Series starts, has a 0.86 ERA. In Walter Alston, the manager, this is from UPI, this was before Osteen's Game 3 start in 1966. Quote, "Osteen has delivered for us time after time. You give him the ball and you don't worry." That was kind of the essence of who Claude Osteen was. He pitched 18 years in the majors, Reds and the Senators before the Dodgers. Then he finished off with Astros, Cardinals, and White Sox. 196 wins, 330 ERA, 104 ERA plus, 3,461 innings. This is one of those things I talked about where everyone sort of went deep back then. 488 career starts in those 18 years. He averaged 6.89 innings per start. Obviously, like, there are zero pitchers averaging, like, close to that in this year. So, like, it was obviously a different era. After his playing days, he was a pitching coach as early as 1977. With the Cardinals, then he moved on to the Phillies, the Rangers, then he was a minor league coach for a little bit in the Dodgers system, and then eventually was their major league pitching coach in 1999 and 2000. The Dodgers actually fired Charlie Huff on May 26th, 1999, and then Osteen took over and then finished off through 2000. Then he retired, or then he sort of went into scouting after that. But yeah, he's, you know, full baseball life, still around. Just a very sort of probably maybe underrated Dodger, just given how long he pitched for them and how good he was and memorable he was to those two teams that got to the World Series. I do have a Claude Osteen trivia question for you, Jacob. Are you ready?
Yahoo, let's do it.
So Claude Osteen ranks 7th all-time in Dodgers history with 2,397 innings. Among the top 31 in Dodgers innings, this, just as a hint, this is everyone for the who's pitched for the Dodgers at least 1,250 innings and up. Osteen is one of only three pitchers without a regular season save with the Dodgers. Who are the other two?
All right. Kershaw?
So the way you said that, just so resigned, like, ugh. I guess. But yes, Clayton Kershaw, you caught the wording correctly when I said without a regular season save.
How did you know that was my hint? You're so...
Yes. So, Kershaw's 5th in innings. He passed Osteen this year, Osteen 7. The other person I will tell you as a hint is 18th in innings and pitched in your lifetime for the Dodgers.
Oh, no. yeah. In my lifetime or my... Do you think I've watched this player?
You've definitely watched this player.
Oh, no.
I will say I believe he debuted the year you were born.
Is it Oral?
No, you were born in 1988, right?
86.
Oh. Well, Oral debuted before that. But, okay. Yeah, so this person debuted 2 years later. My apologies. Oral had 5 saves, by the way.
Okay. That's what I thought. Ramon?
Yep.
Okay.
See, you did excellent.
Whew.
Despite like, just being... What a sigh.
It was so that was a preparatory of the of I don't know who the other one is.
Yeah.
Mostly because and then you gave me the hint and that didn't help because the other names I had written down I figured would be higher than 18th and need to pitch. So there we go. Well, time for our friend and I to turn the tables on you, because it's time for
Questions from Craig.
All right, five questions from Craig. Some of these get split up with sub-questions, including this week's trivia question for you. Miguel Cabrera is two home runs shy of 500. He is inching closer to becoming the most recent member of the 3,000-hit 500 home run club. The first two questions in this week's trivia is about that select group. There are six players who are in this small club. Can Eric name them?
Okay, so obviously Eddie Murray was the best one. Yep. Then Aaron, Mays, Palmeiro.
Yep.
Wow. And then I drop off a little bit here. So I believe Stan Musial ended with 475 homers. Oh. 3,000 hits. I'm drawing a blank. This is bad. A-Rod?
A-Rod's one. So you have one left.
So I'm only missing one. Okay.
I have a big hint if you need it.
Not yet. Okay. Ernie Banks?
Nope.
Yeah, he didn't get to 3,000. Okay. 3,000 hits. Oh, Jesus. Okay. Albert Pujols.
There you go. Yeah. Your hint is currently playing for Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yeah. I had forgotten. I forgot Pujols was at 3,000. Of course he is. Yeah.
Of this group, the same player has the most doubles and the fewest triples. Who is that player?
Of that group?
Yeah.
It's probably Eddie Murray.
It is not. Eddie Murray...
Oh, most doubles. No, most doubles is Pujols for sure.
Yes. Also,
yeah, he's like 670 or
something. Fewer than half the amount of triples as Eddie Murray, for what it's worth.
Wow. Eddie Murray, speed demon. Few people know this.
All right, moving on to the Dodgers. There are seven players in franchise history with a much less exclusive club of 1,000 hits and 200 or more home runs. Obviously, 1,000 or more hits in their Dodgers careers. Can Eric name them? Craig's hint for you is Zach Wheat and Bill Russell are not on the list.
I knew Bill Russell didn't hit 200 homers. All right. So we got Caro Say.
Yep. Yep.
Matt Kemp.
Yep.
Duke Snider.
Yep.
Gil Hodges.
Yep.
So I'm missing two.
You are.
There aren't that many 200 home run hitters. So it's basically all the 200 home run hitters. Let's see. Oh boy.
Craig has this on my cheat sheet ordered by home runs, and you have been dancing around it, but I believe I have the two you haven't named.
So, man, Steve Garvey?
Yep.
Okay.
One left. Fourth and... place according by home runs of this list.
Okay. Oh, fourth place. Wow. Okay. So that means, so it's like Snider, Hodges, Caros.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's someone in between him and Say. Oh my. This is disturbing. Why can't I? Willie Davis didn't hit that many home runs. I already mentioned Say and Garvey. Fairly certain. Yeah, Pedro Guerrero didn't get to 200 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
Piazza was like 170 something. 77, I think. This is bad. Sheffield wasn't a Dodger long enough. Let's see.
We'll let you know this player has the fewest hits of the players on this list.
All right. So, let's see. Cody Bellinger's like 130 something. He'll get there.
My last hit for you, a Brooklyn player.
So 1, 2, 3. Is it Ryan Campanella?
It is.
I wasn't sure if he got to 200 home runs.
242.
Damn. All right. Yeah. I know the three MVPs swayed me into remembering him. So
there. Yeah. All right.
Wow.
So on this list, two different names here. Can you name the Dodgers with the fewest triple on this list and the fewest stolen bases on this list? And then as an additional fun, can you name the Dodgers in order of stolen bases?
Fewest triples. Yeah. Of that group, let's go with. Let's go with Ron Say.
Ron Say is tied for second to last with 18.
Okay.
I'll let you know he's tied with Campy.
Then I will say Garvey.
Garvey is third with 35.
I don't know then on the triples.
Eric Karros with 10.
Of course. Why didn't I think of that? Okay.
Stolen bases.
Now, I've seen Eric Karros try to steal home. He didn't make it. I think he had a couple like sneaky years. But I still am picking him for last in steals.
Nope. There are two below him.
Okay. Campanella?
Second to last with 25.
Ronce.
There you go with 20.
So now I have to
the top
name
four
the order of the yeah. So starting from the lowest. Mm-hmm. Let's see.
Your names are randomize.
Hodges, Garvey, and then Kemp, and then. So Kemp's one.
Yes, 170.
And then why did I forget the other name? So I have Hodges, Garvey, and one other player I need to put in.
Duke Snider is the other player.
Duke Snider's the other
player. You did okay. Name.
So Duke Snider's probably second.
You are correct, 99.
So then I would say Gil Hodges had fewer steals than Garvey.
You're correct. Garvey with 77, Gil Hodges with 63.
Nice.
Good work. For the months of August, September, and October, Trey Turner has stolen a total of 11, 17, 14, and 12 bases in the 2017 through 2020 seasons. For the contest, a two-part question. A, will Turner steal double-digit bases this season for the Dodgers? B.
He already has one.
Will Turner go under, tie, or over the record for most bases stolen by a Dodger acquired at the trade deadline or later since 1995? That record is 16 by Tom Goodwin in 2000.
I think he does steal double-digit bases, and I don't think he... So I think he's under 16.
Okay. You know what? To be sporting, I'll say he steals 16.
Mm-hmm.
Dave gets a toy he hasn't gotten to use, a trick he hasn't gotten to use. He's just going to pull the trigger a bunch. There's my call.
Nice.
How like
you say exactly?
Exactly 1-6.
I love it.
How likely is it that we see Joe Maddon, Aaron Boone, and Joe Girardi managing their respective teams in 2022? Madden and Girardi are under contract through 2022, while Boone's contract is up this season.
I have a hard time thinking they're going to get rid of Madden.
Yeah, ditto.
This is a transition year. They knew it. Girardi, like, they're literally in first place right now. They just won 8th Street. Now, obviously, it's a weird division. And the Yankees are making a surge. Like, Aaron Boone's the most likely, I think, to get fired or not be back.
Yeah.
But I think it's a decent amount of likelihood that all three will be back. But if I had to pick one, probably Boone would be the one.
I feel like the Yankees have kind of been, in different ways, for the Yankees' expectation, disappointing. So,
sure.
Yeah. I'm not saying that's a slam dunk, but I feel like I'll if we're writing this down, I'll say he's not back for the Yankees next year. The Dodgers play 13 straight games until their next off day. How many different pitchers will start, and are they all on the current active roster? If not, name the next pitcher. Bonus points if you can name someone making their Major League Baseball debut. You already kind of hinted this when we were going over the pitching depth or lack therein, so it's time to put some money behind your thoughts.
Okay,
and by money, I mean invisible money doesn't actually exist.
Monopoly money, obviously. True Blue LA Bucks.
The best Bucks.
I think they will use 6 starting pitchers. The next one will be Mitch White. So the options for Major League debut would be Andre Jackson, who's on the 40-man, or Ryan Pepio. At some point in that stretch, probably not just yet for Pepio. Maybe not, but I do think it's probably most likely, if it's not White a second time through, then it's going to be a bullpen game. So, pick anyone like Brusdar or Alex Vesia in the first inning or something. So, yeah, I think that's how it goes. Six starters.
Six starters and no one making their debut.
No debuts.
Well, give me the two names.
Mitch White.
Yep.
Mitch White and Alex Vesey.
Okay, before you mentioned it, I was going to say Mitch White and Brusdar. So,
yeah.
This week's food question was inspired through a text from Sissy Tran, which is a favorite role for cheese as the star of the dish, such as a mac and cheese, a worthy co-star like in a cheeseburger, or a poutine, or as part of the ensemble like a sub or a hoagie.
Wow, I think a co-star is probably the best. I guess
picking my favorite children. I can't. Right, I love all right. of you.
Yeah, doesn't I almost want to say that. I mean, it's not called cheese and macaroni, so isn't it a co-star in macaroni and cheese? No, it really is cheese that sells that dish. I'm not going to lie. Now, this is where I would mention that. Grilled cheese is not listed here, but that's definitely a star of the dish. But I also don't like the fact that sandwiches that are called grilled cheese with meat in them are not grilled cheese.
Yep.
They're melts. So, yeah. Yeah.
And delicious. So my go-to in this regard, the tiebreaker, because I love cheese plates, I love mac and cheese, I love subs and hoagies, where, you know, the provolone maybe is just a slight more textural item than element than anything else. But I think the Philly cheesesteak breaks it for me, where it's clearly the co-star, along with the ribeye or the chicken or whatever you're having it with.
But man, it's the star. It's the best. It's so good. Yeah.
But it's, yeah, and that's where, yeah. And I think actual co-star, like the you're arguing who's up for best actor/actress or supporting actor/actress. That kind of sharing the stage with one other element, but worthy of being the namesake. Literally, cheesesteak.
it's a great, great example. Another one for me that is where cheese plays a vital and co-starring role is nachos. specifically, like, my go-to at, like, a Mexican restaurant is carne asada nachos. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously the chips have to be good. The carne asada is good. But, like, the cheese brings it all together. A worthy co-star of that. And, yeah, it's just, cheese is just so good. Like, there's so many uses for cheese. But I think co-star is the right move. Even like, I guess the queso would be the star if you're like, if it's chips and queso, right? Because you're just using the chips to deliver
right.
the queso. But like, so maybe that's the exception. But like, to me, I think it's co-star all the way. It brings up its cast members, if you will, in the meal. So yeah, God, now I'm really hungry. I want to go get carne asada nachos. So thanks a lot, Craig. You're deciding my lunch yet again.
Just cheese? Are you just going to do a brick of cheese?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right, I'm going to do the Homer Simpson 64 slices of American cheese. So, yeah, exactly. Well, look, let's do this. One slice of American cheese for every new Dodger between now and when we record next week. Oh, God, that's going to be a lot of cheese. So, yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. Go eat some cheese. Go watch some Dodgers. Even if it's a pitcher or a hitter you might not have heard of until this week. Enjoy it, and we will talk to you next week.